Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, ladies and gents. Welcome to the podcast. This episode is brought to you by iTalki. Basically, it's just a very convenient service and you might consider using it. You've got to practice your speaking. You might want to have one-to-one lessons with a teacher. You might just want to find, let's say, someone from the UK who you can talk to on a regular basis and who will help you with your English so you can do loads and loads of practice. Practice of speaking is vital for developing proper fluency. You can do that quite conveniently with iTalki. Go to teacherluke.co.uk/talk. Check out some of the options. You can see some of the teachers, check out their profiles, see their videos. You can get a trial lesson with them just to see what they're like, see all the different options. And when you're ready, you could find the ideal person who's going to help you with your English speaking. All right. Teacherluke.co.uk/talk or click an iTalki logo on my website. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, folks. Welcome to another episode of Luke's English Podcast. How are you doing today? I hope you're doing all right out there in podcast land. In the last episode, we listened to some comedy routines by Scouse comedian John Bishop, and I said that we would take a closer look at the Liverpool accent, break it down, listen to some more samples, and also learn some typical words that you might hear being used in Liverpool. So that is the plan in this episode, all about the Liverpool accent. And there's nowhere in the UK quite like Liverpool. You probably know it as the place that the Beatles came from, or because of the football clubs like Liverpool Football Club and Everton Football Club. Perhaps some of you have visited it or studied there as students because it is a big university town. I lived in Liverpool for 4 years as a student. And I remember when I first moved there, my feelings were that it was very different. I'm from the Midlands, but I'm also from the South. So this was the first time I'd actually lived up north, because there is a north-south divide in the UK, or in England, to be more specific. There is a north-south divide. So people in the south, that will be, I guess, from sort of the southern part of the country up to the Midlands. And then you got the north, which is, I guess, from the top of the Midlands and up. But many people in the south divide it into north and south. So if you live in London, you might consider anything north of, let's say, Watford, even, to be the north, and that actually includes the Midlands and other areas. But there's definitely this north-south divide. In the south, people probably ignore the north a little bit, or they imagine it's this kind of slightly grim existence where the weather is worse and there's a lot of unemployment or something. That's the kind of dismissive attitude you might here in the south. In the north, people might look to the south and consider southerners to be a bit soft, to be quite selfish, where everything revolves around London. Whereas in the north, people are a bit more genuine. It's a bit more real. You get local communities that stick together, and people are generally sort of warm and friendly, for example. So there is a kind of a slight difference, certainly between the north and south. I'm from the Midlands and the South, so I guess I'm sort of a southerner, really. So when I moved to Liverpool, my first feeling was like, it's definitely up north. It feels like I'm in a northern town. And it's the first time I'd lived up there. And I mean, partly that's just the climate in the north. It's colder. In the winter, the days are shorter. It's a bit darker and colder. Plus, it can be quite a windswept town, Liverpool, because it's there next to the Irish Sea, so you get these strong winds that whip in from the sea, and generally the climate's a bit colder. People in Liverpool are different to the people anywhere else in the country, really. They're known for being kind of cheeky and chatty. quite tough people, humorous, a bit tricky sometimes. Like you get some tricky characters who might be up to no good. But also proud people, proud of their city, and also quite sentimental about Liverpool. And also, Scousers are known for being a bit sensitive about the city as well. Liverpool has a particular history that isn't shared by other towns in England. Its cultural mix is different to the rest of the country. The accent in particular is very distinctive, and it's confined for one accent to be localised to, when you consider the accent diversity in other larger countries where you might find the same accent being heard for many, many miles. Like, for example, Texas, for example. We talk about the Texas accent, but Texas is a huge place. By comparison, Liverpool is minuscule in size. And it just shows that in England, our accents are very specific and very local. If you travel just 30 minutes by car from Liverpool to neighbouring Manchester, you'll find that the accent is very different. And this is largely because of the unique history of Liverpool as an international port, and also just generally the rich diversity of influences. So this is a corner of the country with a strong character and a recognisable accent to go along with it. Scousers, or people from Liverpool, are instantly recognisable by their accent. The sound of a Liverpool accent instantly conjures up certain images, certain clichés, certain reference points, and a certain history which is unique to that part of the country. In this episode, the plan is to investigate the Liverpool accent, and to some extent, the dialect, listen to some samples, find out some of the pronunciation features, and also consider a little bit of Liverpool's history and culture. And we'll listen to a few different people speaking in a Liverpool accent, and I'll help you to understand it all. And I'm sure that you'll pick up some nice vocabulary on the way, and not just local slang words, but words that in fact everybody in the country uses, but which the Scousers might just pronounce in their own way. So the aim is to broaden your horizons, broaden your exposure to different accents, and to help you get a full appreciation of English in all its forms. And we're going to start by listening to an advert, okay? A commercial from the TV, an advertisement on TV, a TV advert. This is an advert that used to be on the TV and which millions of British people watched many times. The famous milk advert. And this is what pretty much the entire nation, certainly of my generation, might think of as a sample of Scouse English. Many of us heard this lots of times growing up. We saw it on TV every day. And a lot of us even learnt it as well. I used to be able to recite this whole advertisement word for word when I was a kid. In fact, I think I can probably still do it. So just to set the scene before I play the audio of this advert, imagine two children from Liverpool who have been playing football in the garden, all right? They've been running around playing football in the garden, and they're sort of thirsty and they need refreshment. So they come into the house to get something refreshing to drink from the fridge, or should that be the fridge? They get something from the fridge, and one of them asks for lemonade, and the other one chooses to drink milk, because this is what Ian Rush drinks. Milk? It's what Ian Rush drinks. Ian Rush was a famous footballer in the 1980s. He played football for Liverpool for years, and he scored many goals for them. He was amazing. He was Welsh. Never played for England because he was Welsh. That's Ian Rush. By the way, you should also know there is a place in England which is called Accrington. Accrington. It's a town north of Manchester. And their football team, called Accrington Stanley, are not very good. They're kind of an unknown football team. So Accrington Stanley is a reference for an unknown football team that nobody wants to play for. Okay, so you've heard Ian Rush and Accrington Stanley. I'll let you now listen to the advert. And see if you can just, well, see if you can understand it, and then we'll pick apart some of the features of the speech in a moment.
Got any lemonade? He wants. Milk! Ugh! It's what Ian Rush drinks.
Ian Rush?
Yeah, said if I didn't drink lots of milk, when I grow up, I'm going to be good enough to play for Accrington Stanley.
Accrington Stanley? Who are they?
Exactly. Now get off.
Give me some.
Get off.
Okay, Accrington Stanley, who are they? Exactly. Right, that is the that's the kind of reference for so many people in the UK of a Scouse accent. Milk, eh? That's disgusting. It's what Ian Rush drinks. Ian Rush, yeah. He said if I don't... What is it? If I don't drink enough milk, I'll only be good enough to play for Accrington Stanley. Accrington Stanley, who are they? Exactly. Alright, there you go. Let's just go through that again and see if we can break it down sentence by sentence and pick out any particular features of speech. Could you hear this? Could you hear the sound of it as well? It's very sort of like this. Now imagine, I mean, they're kids, first of all. They're kids, so they sort of speak like this up here, don't they? But you know what? Even some Scouse people speak up here. Alright, mate, see you a student. You know, it sometimes is quite high-pitched, quite nasal. Let's have a listen. Milk, eh?
Got any lemonade?
Got any lemonade? Got any lemonade? Have you got any lemonade? Got any lemonade?
Got any lemonade? If you want.
If you want. Have you got any lemonade? If you want. And he gets his milk out of the fridge. Pours a glass for himself.
Milk! It's what Ian Rush drinks.
Ian Rush?
Yeah, and he said if I didn't drink lots of milk.
He said if I didn't drink lots of milk. If I... So it's not if I. If I didn't drink lots of milk. It's if I didn't drink lots of milk. Well, you don't do it that much, but can you hear the k sound? You don't really find that anywhere else in England. If I didn't drink lots of milk. That's really quite a specific thing. That's one of the features. We'll be looking at the specific features in a moment, but also the way he says I. If I don't, if I didn't drink lots of milk, if I didn't drink lots of milk.
Ian Rush. Yeah, and he said if I didn't drink lots of milk, when I grow up, I'll only be good enough to play for Accrington Stanley.
I'll only be good enough to play for Accrington Stanley. I'll only be good enough to play for Accrington Stanley. I'll only be good enough to play for Accrington Stanley.
Didn't drink lots of milk. When I grow up, I'm going to be good enough to play for Accrington Stanley.
Accrington Stanley? Who are they?
Exactly.
Exactly. Wow. Okay, then, so there's your introduction to the Liverpool accent. Let's go into it in a bit more detail, shall we? That thing, that sound, you get that when it's normally a K sound, like a K sound or a K sound. That in a Liverpool accent would come out as a kind of sound. And it makes me think of this comedian called Lee Mack, who I just saw a clip of him making fun of the Liverpool accent. This is Lee Mack making fun of the Liverpool accent, and especially that feature of when a K sound becomes a K sound. And I would say Lee Mack, that's his name, but a Scouser might call him Lee Mack. And he kind of makes fun of that, saying that when someone is so Scouse that they start to turn into a dolphin.
Like a really classy girl. What a great Scouse accent as well. I love it when someone's so Scouse they sound like they're turning into a dolphin. You know, proper Scousers. Fucking hell. Hey, hey, you. Hey, are you Lee Mack? Are you Lee Mack? Are you fucking Lee Mack? Are you...
Hey, Mace, are you fucking Lee Mack? Okay, all right. Anyway, that's just that particular K, which becomes K sound. Let's go through some accent features, okay? Let's do it. Let's go through some different features of the Liverpool accent, all right, and break it down. These features are quite subtle, but I don't know, breaking it down like this might help. right? It might help you to kind of decode the Liverpool accent. Then we'll listen to some more samples and see if you can understand it. And then hopefully by the end of the episode, you'll be more familiar. You'll be a bit more comfortable and familiar with this other version of English that you might hear. So consonant sounds, we'll start with them, consonant sounds and how they're different. So we're comparing a Liverpool accent with a sort of received pronunciation accent, like the way that I normally speak. Okay, so consonant sounds. The first one is obviously k, which we know becomes kh. So like in the word loch, you know, Loch Ness, that kh sound. So obviously we had Accrington Stanley, which becomes Accrington Stanley. Accrington. Milk becomes milk. And Lee Mack becomes Lee Mack. Okay. All right, so watch out for that. Also, R sounds, R sounds in words are replaced by this alveolar tap. Did I say alveolar flap before? Could also be a flap. Flap, tap, kind of does the same job, really. But anyway, Accrington Stanley, you hear the alveolar tap there? That's where you tap your tongue just onto the alveolar ridge, which is that ridge of sort of flesh behind your teeth. Tap there. So it's not a full rhotic R. It doesn't go, you know, I can't do it very well. But, you know, in many languages, you have a full-on rolled rhotic R. Well, in a Liverpool accent, it's not a full-on roll. It's just a tap. So Accrington Stanley, Accrington. And I'm afraid I'm not from round here would be, I'm afraid I'm not from round here. I'm afraid, you hear it's just once, afraid. I'm afraid I'm not from round here. It's just like an alveolar tap there. All right, mate. All right. Not all right. All right. See, it's just one tap. All right, mate. I'm not from round here. I'm afraid I'm not from round here, mate. So that's the R sounds. T sounds, a T sound, sometimes can sound like a S sound. It becomes more fricative. Okay, T can sound like S. So for example, in the word butter, I would say butter. In Liverpool, it might be butter. Excuse me, mate, can you pass the butter? Can you pass that butter? I'm going to go into town later. I'm going to go into town. Not I'm going to go into town, but the into town becomes into town. Later. Not later. Later. Do you want something? Come on then, mate. Let's start. Come, Ed. Let's get started. Let's get started. Let's get started. G or a G sound. Like the letter G at the end of a word, G, it's not just pronounced with the ng sound. Like, for example, in the word sing or a singer, you can hear the ing, right? That ing. It's not just that, but it becomes all the way around to a G sound. So I would say sing, and in Liverpool you might hear sing. So it actually bounces back to G. Sing. He's a singer. Here, mate, are you a singer? You going to sing us a song? Okay. Here, mate, are you going to sing us a song? Are you a singer? Right. So I would say, are you a singer? Are you going to sing us a song? Are you a singer? Are you going to sing us a song? For example. But also the G is sometimes completely dropped, like at the end of some words, like, yeah, mate, what are you doing? What are you doing? Not what are you doing, but what are you doing? What are you doing? What are yous doing? Like that, okay. Milk, that's disgusting. Not disgusting. That's disgusting. All right. So sometimes it's like sing and singer, and sometimes it's like, that's disgusting. H sounds, huh. Sounds are often dropped, especially at the beginning of words. So I would say that has never happened, to be honest. And in Liverpool, it might be that's never happened, to be honest. That has never happened, to be honest. That has never happened. And hear the alveolar tap between never happened, never happened, to be honest. That has never happened, to be well, honest doesn't have one anyway, does it? Honest is a silent H, but certainly has and happened. That has never happened. That's never happened. Okay. And d sounds, like d or d sounds, you sometimes get them instead of TH sounds. So you get a D instead of a the, okay? So I would say they do, though, don't they, though. They do, though, don't they, though. In Liverpool, it might be, de do, though, don't de do. De do, though, don't de. They do, though, don't they. They do, though, don't de do. And that's kind of a Liverpool catchphrase or a cliche of Liverpool. All right, I'm from Liverpool. All right, calm down. De-doo-doh, don't-de-doh. You know, that's a sort of a Liverpool cliche, that one. De-doo-doh, don't de-doo-doh, don't-de-doh, de-doo. Right. They do, though, don't they? Vowel sounds. The sound, like in bird, becomes like air in air, like the air that you breathe. So becomes air. So, for example, I would say work in Liverpool, it's work. First and fast and bird and bed. Here, mate, are you always the first one to get to work in the morning? Are you always the first one to get to work in the morning? Here, mate, are you looking at my bed? Are you looking at my bed? Are you looking at my bird? Meaning, are you looking at my girlfriend? R sounds, which you find in the south, like in the words bath and grass and laugh, generally in the north, they become ah sounds. So that's generally true in the north. And it's true in Liverpool as well. You might hear bath, grass, laugh. But sometimes those sounds become wider, like in ah, like a kind of ah sound. So you get this kind of like, here, mate, have you got any Pokemon cards? Pokemon cards. Cards. I think that sounds really Welsh, that one. Have you got any Pokemon cards? Sounds kind of Welsh to me. I used to work in Liverpool. I worked in a shop. I worked in HMV, which is a big music shop in the centre of Liverpool. And we used to get these kids coming in, these scallies. Scallies are like little, they're like kids who are probably up to no good, probably dressed in tracksuits. And they'd come up to the counter where I was working. They'd be like, here, mate, have you got any Pokemon cards? Give us some Pokemon cards. Like that. Cards and cards. Pokemon cards. Right? Does it sound different to you? Does it sound like a totally different version of the language or something? I wonder. The sound in book sometimes sounds like ooh, like book. But not every time, strangely. Sometimes they say it like me, like in words took and look, but with the k sound. Took and look. I took a look inside the box, and you'll never guess what I saw. I took a look. So took and look sound like the way I say it, but some words become ooh, like book. I took a look inside the box, and I saw loads of books. I don't know why it's book and not book. It's just the way it is. ER sounds at the ends of words, like teacher, computer, singer. ER sounds, which are normally produced with a schwa sound, like, for example, teacher, that's a schwa sound. In Liverpool, you might find that they are pronounced with an E sound, like computer, teacher, fitter, singer, like that as well. Okay, teacher, computer. I'd say computer, and it's computer. Here, mate, can I use your computer? Are you a teacher? For example. The sound becomes like or oh. So I would say like shut up. You might hear, shut up. Shut up, will ya? Shut up. And also right? You hear people saying that, right, when they're thinking, Well, in Liverpool, it's eh, all right? Like in Spanish, right? This is how Spanish people say, Like, everyone in the world's got a different way of saying, In French, it's like, ba, like that, ba. In Japan, it's, what is it? It's, edo, edone, like that. And in Spain, it's eh. And in Liverpool, it's eh as well. All right, mate, what are you doing? And also, you get this vowel sound, air, like in hair, for example. I need a haircut. And over there, sometimes that becomes er. So you get her. I need a new haircut. You know, I'd like to be a hairdresser or two. I'd like to be two hairdressers. I'd like to open up my own hairdresser over there. Over there, like that. So sometimes air becomes er, which I think is a slightly old-fashioned thing. You heard the Beatles doing that. That's the sort of thing that the Beatles would do. I, you know, how did you get your haircut? This haircut. I can't do it. This haircut. All right. So anyway, there you go. All those features are quite interesting, but there is a good chance, I imagine, that all of that just went straight over your head, possibly. Really, the best way to get used to hearing any kind of English, including Scouse English, is just to listen to some people using it. So let's move on to listen to another audio sample. And I'm not going to tell you anything about this one before you start listening to it. Okay, I'm not telling you anything in advance. So I just want you to listen to it, and I'd like you to work out who is he and what's he talking about. Okay, who is he in general? And even just what's the general subject that's being talked about here. If you can get any specific details, that's great. You might find this one to be tricky. Let's see. Who is he and what is he talking about? Here we go.
Unlike any fan, you get excited, think who you might bring in, and, you know, being involved just because you're a player is still exactly the same as the man on the street. You're picking up the paper, hopefully you're going to see you've signed someone, but I think this summer's been a bit of speculation about maybe players moving on, so at the moment I'm just hoping that that doesn't happen rather than people come in, because, I mean, I think we've got a great side and a great squad at the moment. I'm sure the manager's going to make a couple of additions, but we certainly don't want to lose anyone. We've never really had as good a challenge as we've had under Rafa in the 5 years he's been here, so to do that and to get 86 points, beat Man United twice, Chelsea twice and still not win the league is probably a disappointment, but I think we can look on back on it and say, you know, it's definitely progression, but now there's only one more progression for us now, otherwise we'd have either, you know, gone back or stood still. So there's, you know, we all realise that there's only one place for us to go now.
Woo! How'd you get on with that one then, hey? How did you get on with that one? Well, I have to say this is a slightly difficult one to listen to. And it, you know, generally agreed to be a difficult one to listen to. The title of this video is Jamie Carragher Butchers the English Language. So this is an example of actually someone speaking in a way that, you know, many people can't understand. Now, most of the time, people from all over the UK can understand people in Liverpool. It's not a problem. We can understand Liverpudlians, definitely. But sometimes you get football players, and Jamie Carragher, who you just heard, is a football player. He's from Liverpool. He played for Liverpool for many years and England. Football players aren't always the most articulate people. They're not always the best speakers. So really, I think this video, it's not really about how Scouse English is impossible to understand. It's just about how Jamie Carragher as an individual is difficult to understand. The main problem for me in all of that, the reason why it's difficult to follow, is because he doesn't pause anywhere. I mean, there's no sentence stress going on at all, no pausing. I think the pronunciation is probably not that bad, but it's the lack of pausing. It's just this kind of constant stream of words. And that makes it hard. Also, if you're watching the video, you see the subtitles flying along underneath from right to left really quickly. And that kind of also gives the impression that he's inarticulate. I think if he paused more, then it would be, you know, possible to understand him. What I'm going to do now is just go through that again and just read it to you at sort of my speed. In my voice, and see if you can follow it. So Jamie Carragher is a football player. He was talking about he's talking about, you know, when you wonder which new players are going to be brought into the team. So at the end of every season, there's this period where there are transfers. So we're talking about football now. There's this period at the end of the football season where there are transfers, and that's where people move into your team or potentially people leave the team. And Jamie Carragher was excited, you know, wondering who was going to be brought into the team. He was concerned that some people would leave because he thinks they've got a really good squad, they've got a good team, and he thinks that you know, the only option they have is to make progress in the future. Let me read it to you then myself and see if you can follow it, and then we'll listen to him one more time and then we'll move on. I'm like any fan, you know, you get excited thinking about who you might bring in and, you know, being involved. Just because you're a player, you're just exactly the same as the man on the street. You're picking up the paper. Hopefully you're going to see that you've signed someone. To sign someone means to bring a new player into the team. Hopefully you're going to see that you've signed someone. But I think this summer there's been speculation about maybe players moving on. So at the moment, I'm just hoping that that doesn't happen now. He's hoping that people don't leave. Hopefully he wants people to come in. Because, I mean, we've got a great side, a great squad at the moment. I'm sure the manager's going to make a couple of additions, but we certainly don't want to lose anyone. We've never really had as good a challenge as we've had under Rafa. Meaning we've never... Rafa is their manager. Rafael Benitez, he was saying they've never had a good chance as they have now with Rafa. So they think they're in a good, strong position. We've never had such a good chance as we've had with Rafa in the 5 years that he's been here. So to do that and to get 86 points, beat Manchester United twice, Chelsea twice, and still not win the league is probably disappointing. So he's saying that although they played well, they beat Manchester United and Chelsea several times, the fact that they didn't win the league is disappointing for them. But now he's saying that they can look forward to the future. I think we can look back on it and say, you know, it's definitely progression. But now there's only one more progression for us now. Otherwise, we've either gone back or we've stood still. So, you know, we all realise there's only one place for us to go now. And that means like forward or to make progress. Let's listen to him again then and see if that makes any difference. Maybe you can understand a bit more this time. Here we go.
I'm like any fan, you get excited, think who you might bring in and, you know, being involved just because you're a player, it's still exactly the same as the man on the street. You're picking up the paper, hopefully you're going to see you've signed someone. But I think this summer's been a bit of speculation about maybe players moving on. So at the moment, I'm just hoping that that doesn't happen rather than people come in. Because, I mean, I think we've got a great side and a great squad at the moment. I'm sure the manager's going to make a couple of additions, but we certainly don't want to lose anyone. We've never really had as good a challenge as we've had under Rafa in the 5 years he's been here. So to do that and to get 86 points, beat Man United twice, Chelsea twice and still not win the league is probably a disappointment. But I think we can look on back on it and say, you know, it's definitely progression, but now there's only one more progression for us now. Otherwise we'd have either, you know, gone back or stood still. So there's, you know, we all realise that there's only one place for us to go now.
Okay, just an example of how pausing and you know, giving different stress and intonation to your sentences is vital to make you sound comprehensible. So there you go. That was Jamie Carragher. I think we'll listen to a little bit more football now, just a bit more, maybe one other bit of football, because, you know, I'm searching for samples of people speaking with an authentic Liverpool accent. Many of the people I found were footballers. So let's have one more, because it's quite interesting to hear footballers. I mean, you hear different types of English, right? There are different types of English out there in the world. The English that you hear on the BBC, the English that you hear in stand-up comedy, the English that you hear in the market, you know, business English, this kind of English, academic English, all these different types of English. And there's this other type of English, which is the way that professional footballers talk to journalists. And it's this, I don't know what it is exactly, but it's a genuine thing that often professional footballers are not completely articulate, and they rely on certain cliched phrases like, you know, I just went out there, I've just done my best, you know, let my feet do the talking, you know, and obviously the manager's, you know, manager's been working hard this year, so we're going to put our best foot forwards, and, you know, it's a game of two halves at the end of the day, you know, those kind of cliches. Like David Beckham, if you ever do a David Beckham impression, you can just sort of make your voice go like this, because this is how David Beckham speaks. I don't know if you realise it. I know David Beckham is a beautiful man. He's a stunning specimen of mankind. But, you know, it's best if he doesn't open his voice, because obviously, you know, we've gone out there, we've tried our best, like the manager's told us to, like, just go and have fun. And we've worked hard in the second half. We've worked hard all throughout the lunch break. Just cliched kind of ways that footballers speak. So let's just have a little bit more of a professional footballer from Liverpool. And now you're going to hear Steven Gerrard. Steven Gerrard When I lived in Liverpool, the first year I lived there, I lived in this tower block on the Scotland Road. Scotland Road is one of the roughest, toughest districts in Liverpool. It was not far from the Everton football ground, Goodison Park. Goodison Park. So I used to live there, and it was a rough and tough place. On the street where the tower block was, sometimes we would see a red BMW parked up outside a house. And we thought, oh, is that a gangster or something? Because you don't often see an expensive car. Later on, we learned that it was Stephen Gerrard's car, because that was his mum's house. So he used to visit his mum sometimes, and we'd see his car parked outside the building. So Stephen Gerrard is from a proper part of Liverpool, and you can hear it in his accent. He's got a really authentic, genuine, modern Liverpool accent. So let's listen to him. Stephen Gerrard, by the way, I think he's a retired now professional footballer. He used to be the England captain. He was captain of Liverpool Football Club. He played for Liverpool for almost his entire career. Very loyal to the club and a loyal Liverpudlian. So this is Stephen Gerrard talking to the media. And so I've got just a couple of questions for you. One question is, what is he looking forward to? What is Stephen Gerrard looking forward to? And he's talking about playing for England here. So what's he looking forward to? Secondly, is he worried about the regime change with Fabio Capello? So this is at the time when England were about to get a new manager. Because the story of football for the England team is a sad story. You know, we won the World Cup in 1966, and ever since, we've failed to do very well. We've never got to the final since then. And we've been through a succession of different managers, most of whom get fired in shame because they got knocked out of some tournament on penalties, probably to Germany. And a few years ago, we decided that we would employ a manager with an excellent track record. So we took on the Italian football coach, Fabio Capello, because he had such a brilliant track record. The idea was that he was going to come in, he was going to be a breath of fresh air for the England team, and that there would be a regime change. Regime change, that's like a change to the whole organisational system, the way the whole thing has been led and managed. So Stephen Gerrard worried about the regime change with Fabio Capello, because Capello was known for being a disciplinarian? And does he have a message of hope for England fans? Because obviously all England fans are desperate for hope. Just give us a little bit of hope, please. And they talk about David Beckham a little bit. And it's what would it mean to David Beckham to achieve 100 caps? What's he looking forward to? What does he think of the regime change? Does he have hope for England fans? And what would it mean to David Beckham to achieve 100 caps? A cap, you get a cap every time you play for your country. So Beckham was at this point just under 100 caps. So he'd played just less than 100 games for England. So what would it mean to Beckham to get 100 caps? Here we go.
Stephen, we're very close now to the first announcement of Fabio Capello's first squad for the game against Switzerland. How much are you looking forward to that game and that chance perhaps to have a fresh start with England?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the squad getting announced first of all. Obviously you look for your names to see whether you're involved, but I think every England player is looking forward to the new regime, if you like, and looking forward to get back winning in England shape, because you know it has been a difficult time of late, because we have underachieved.
And the new manager has a reputation for being a disciplinarian. Any apprehension at all amongst the players as to what that might mean for you when you meet up with England?
No, not really. We understand what Fabio's about, and it's important that we just get together and get used to him, get a feel for what he wants, and as players we've got to adapt to that. He's the boss now, so we do what he says, and if he wants to change certain things, we've got to do it his way.
Have you had a message of hope, perhaps, for England fans who are looking to the future and hoping things can improve?
Well, I think, of course, there's certainly hope there. You look at this guy's CV, and everywhere he's been, Italy, Spain, he's made a success of it, and he's certainly a winner. So to have him in charge of our nation, I think it's only going to be positive.
Perhaps the other biggest talking point about the Switzerland game is the possibility of it being David Beckham's 100th cap. We can't preempt the squad, I guess, but what would it mean to David, do you think, to achieve that mark?
Yeah, I think it means an awful lot to him. You go back to his first cap, I'm sure it seems a long way away from him. So to get to the 100, I'm sure it's a milestone he's always dreamed of achieving. So without picking the manager's squad, I do hope for David's sake that he is named and he does get on the pitch to make it 100. But you know, I still feel he's got an awful lot to offer in England shirt. He's still got the ability and he looks after himself and he's as fit as anyone. So I'm sure, you know, David wants more than 100.
All right, then. Did you get all the answers? Let's have a little listen again and we'll sort of pay specific attention to what he said.
Now to the first announcement of Fabio Capello's first squad for the game against Switzerland. How much are you looking forward to that game and that chance perhaps to have a fresh start with England?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the squad getting announced first of all.
I'm looking forward to the squad getting announced first of all. I'm looking forward to the squad getting announced first of all. Do you notice the way he said looking, looking, and first of all?
Chance perhaps to have a fresh start with England?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the squad getting announced first of all. Obviously you look for your names to see whether you're involved, but I think
You look for your name to see whether you're involved, but...
I think every England player is looking forward to the new regime, if you like.
Every England player is looking forward to the new regime. Are you... Like, let's do what we did before. I'll pause it. I want you to try and identify what you just heard, and then I'm going to repeat it.
Looking forward to get back winning in an England shirt, because, you know...
Looking forward to get back winning in an England shirt. Looking forward to get back winning in an England shirt. Can you say that? It's actually grammatically incorrect. It should be, I'm looking forward to getting back winning. But he said, I'm looking forward to get back winning in an England shirt. Winning in an England shirt. Winning in an England shirt.
It has been, you know, difficult. Looking forward to get back winning in an England shirt because, you know, it has been, you know, a difficult time of late because...
It has been a difficult time of late. Not it has been a difficult time. It has been a difficult time.
You know, we have underachieved.
And the new manager has a reputation for being a disciplinarian. Any apprehension at all amongst the players as to what that might mean for you when you meet up with England?
No, not really. We understand what Fabio's about. And, you know, it's important that we just get together and get used to him.
We understand what Fabio's about. It's important we just get together and get used to him. We just get together and get used to him.
And what Fabio's about and... You know, it's important that we just get together and get used to him, get a feel for what he wants and, you know, as players we've got to adapt to that, you know.
Get a feel for what he wants, to get a feel for something, meaning sort of like get a sense of what something is, to get a feel for something or to adapt to what he wants.
Get a feel for what he wants and, you know, as players we've got to adapt to that, you know, he's the boss now.
We've got to adapt to that. We've got to adapt to that. He's the boss.
So we do what he says, and if he wants to change certain things, we've got to do it his way.
If he wants to change certain things, if he wants to change certain things, if he wants to change certain things, things. Okay, I'm going to stop that there. You'll find that video on the page for the episode, all right? So you can go back to it. I just wanted to, since we were talking about the kind of cliched way that football players respond to interviews like this, here's an example of a spoof. A character called Wayne Gerrard, who I guess is like a combination between Wayne Rooney and Steven Gerrard. And this is a character played by a comedian called Paul Whitehouse. And it's a spoof of the way that footballers talk to journalists, and specifically Scouse footballers talk to journalists. And they just roll out the same cliches. You know, I'm just going to get my head down. If you get your head down, it means you don't really cause much fuss. You just get on with the job. Just get my head down. I'll let my feet do the talking. If you let your feet do the talking, it means that you won't say too much off the pitch, and instead you'll just, you know, let your football do the talking, you know, just sort of make your statements by playing football, not speaking to the press. We're very pleased for the fans. I'm very pleased for the manager. We're just going to take it one game at a time. I'm just going to keep my head down, let my feet do the talking. Just, you know, take it one game at a time. Just let my football do the talking. You know, just all of those cliches. And so here's that little sketch of Wayne Gerrard by Paul Whitehouse.
Hello. Wayne Gerrard, great match and a personal triumph for you. You must be pleased with the way you took your goals.
Well, I always said I was going to let me football do the talking. You know, very pleased with the result. Very pleased for the team and anything else, you know.
And they must be doubly satisfied with all the personal problems you've been having lately.
I don't think about anything like that, you know. Just keep my head down and let my feet do the talking.
And the chance of Chelsea next.
Well, it's one game at a time, you know. Very pleased for the fans. Keep my head down. Let me feet do the talking. Pleased for the back, you know. Keep my head down. Let me football do the talking. Pleased for everyone connected with the club, you know. Keep my head down. Do me talking on the pitch, you know. Just keep my head down.
Wayne, thanks for...
All right. Now, let's move on. I'm just going to tell you a short history of Liverpool at this point. Here it is, a short history of Liverpool in a nutshell. Right, so Liverpool, you know where it is, right? I told you in the last episode, it's in the northwest of England. It's a port town on the River Mersey, just where the north coast of Wales meets the west coast of England. That corner there, that's where you find Liverpool. The general area there is called Merseyside, around the River Mersey. Liverpool started as a small trading port, probably in like the 13th or 14th centuries. By the 17th and 18th centuries, it was the primary or one of the most important ports for trade in the country and the primary port for trade with Ireland, okay? And there was lots of trade with Ireland and also ships coming from Norway and Sweden or from other Scandinavian countries, northern European countries. The Industrial Revolution, globalization, and Britain's colonialism meant that Liverpool became a hugely important port for British ships heading to the Americas in the 19th century because it faces in that direction. So Liverpool was one of the places that connected England to the Americas, let's say, and other parts of the world. As a result, by the mid-19th century, Liverpool was a hugely important city for trading with the New World. The population of the city grew quickly with amazing diversity. Everyone from around the world was there, including large numbers of Irish and Welsh workers from Ireland and Wales, Scandinavian sailors, but also Chinese workers, Caribbean workers associated with the slave trade as well. Liverpool was one of the most important and most impressive cities in the world at this time, and it was sometimes called the New York of Europe. And you can see evidence of that in some of the buildings, like parts of the city resemble some of the style of New York buildings, especially in the old part of town and by the docks. For example, the famous Liver building, which has got these two metal Liver birds on the top. It's the symbol of Liverpool. The diverse history is still evident in the cultural makeup of the city, and there is still a large Chinese community and also many families of Caribbean origin in parts of Liverpool. The biggest influences, though, were from the Welsh and certainly the Irish communities who moved into Liverpool for the manual work that was available there in the 19th century. Liverpool is heavily influenced by the Irish. And it was described even as the capital of Ireland sometimes, just because so many Irish people lived there. And all of these influences can be heard in the Liverpool accent. Some Irish, some features of Welsh, which is a totally different language to English, by the way, Welsh. And also some Scandinavian influences and many others that make Liverpool so different. That's also combined with the local Lancashire accent, just next door where you find Manchester. So it's also, you know, influenced by the Lancashire accent. And all of it combines to create this particularly rich and vibrant form of English. The city was very rich and very important during the Industrial Revolution. But conditions for many of the people living there were appalling. You know, people living squeezed into dirty and dangerous slums. And gradually, Britain's position as the global industrial imperial power started slipping. And the two world wars sped up that process. Many young men were killed in World War One. And between the two wars, Liverpool was partly redesigned with many residential areas being built around the outskirts of the city. And lots of people who previously lived in the slums were relocated there. And this changed the nature of the city with large outlying residential areas with row upon row of terraced houses. World War II was devastating to Liverpool as it was the target of bombing raids by the Luftwaffe, the German planes, who came over and bombed the city. Like many cities in the UK, Liverpool got pounded by bombs night after night, and lots of buildings were destroyed, and they stayed destroyed for many years. Even when the Beatles were growing up in Liverpool in the 1950s, it was common for children to play in bomb sites, in the remains of buildings destroyed by bombs. And even when I was living there in the 1990s, I saw lots of empty spaces in residential streets where buildings used to exist but still hadn't been replaced since the war. So with the end of the Industrial Revolution, Liverpool's importance slipped. And basically, since World War II, Liverpool has been a rather tough place to live, with various social problems, unemployment, poverty, and perhaps the sense that the city has been somewhat ignored or forgotten by the country, which used to rely on it so much. That's painting a rather sad picture. The actual fact is that Liverpool remains this vibrant place with people who've got personality, and the city is you know, it's different to other parts of the country. So it's got this proud, vibrant culture, which is this odd combination of this old industrial history with some more popular elements these days. Like, for example, today the city is known for the Beatles, the football clubs and their players, and some cultural things such as the vibrant art scene, the universities, and just the Scouse people themselves, who are known for their humour and their unique character. Here is a female voice from Liverpool. I'm going to play you a clip of Jennifer Ellison, who is an actress from Liverpool, and so she's talking about being a mum, okay? So this is Jennifer Ellison talking about being a mum. Again, see if you can notice any features of the Scouse accent in this clip. I'll go through a couple of bits in a moment. It's only, I think it's less than a minute long, this clip. I think so. 45 seconds. Here we go.
What is the best thing about being a mum?
It's just the best thing in the world. Kind of.
What's the best thing about being a mum? That's the question, right?
What's the best thing about being a mum?
It's just the best thing in the world. I can't even describe it. Until you're a mum, you'll never know. It's just the most rewarding, difficult and amazing, amazing thing to be a mum.
Do you have a piece of advice that you want to instil in your kids?
Just to live every day and to have no regrets, really. That's how I live my life.
Brilliant. So they're going to follow on in your footsteps?
Yes, hopefully.
And what work are you up to at the moment?
I'm in Singing in the Rain in the West End.
Amazing.
Currently, yes. So Sundays are my day off, so it must be a good award to get me here.
Absolutely. Will you enjoy it, Jennifer?
Oh, thank you very much.
All right. That was Jennifer Ellison talking about being the best thing about being a mum. Let's have a little listen again. I'm going to break it up and pick apart exactly what she said.
What is the best thing about being a mum?
It's just the best thing in the world.
Oh, it's just the best thing in the world. It's just the best thing in the world. It's just the best thing in the world.
Until you're a mum, you'll never know.
Until you're a mum.
Describe it. Until you're a mum, you'll never know. It's just the most rewarding.
It's just the most rewarding. It's just the most rewarding thing, is she going to say?
It's just the most rewarding, difficult and amazing, amazing thing to be a mum.
Right, it's the most rewarding, difficult and amazing thing to be a mum. It's the most rewarding, difficult and amazing thing to be a mum. Most rewarding, difficult and amazing thing to be a mum. A mum, not a mum. Mum.
Do you have a piece of advice that you want to instil in your kids?
Do you have a piece of advice you want to instill in your kids? Isn't it just like, live every day as if it's your last, or something like that? Right, you must have noticed that.
Just to live every day and to have no regrets, really.
Just live every day and have no regrets, really.
That's how I live my life.
That's how I live my life. That's how I live my life. That's how I live my life.
Brilliant. So they're going to follow on in your footsteps?
Yes, hopefully.
And what work are you up to at the moment?
What work are you up to at the moment? What work are you up to at the moment? And she says she's in Singing in the Rain, which is a musical Singing in the Rain. I'm singing in the rain. You know that musical? She says, I'm in Singing in the Rain.
Brilliant. So they're going to follow on in your footsteps?
Yes, hopefully.
What work are you up to at the moment?
I'm in Singing in the Rain in the West End.
I'm in Singing in the Rain in the West End. Singing in the Rain. I'm in Singing in the Rain. I'm in Singing in the Rain. I'm in Singing in the Rain at the West End.
Amazing.
Currently, yes. So Sundays are my day off.
Sundays are my day off. Sundays are my day off. Me day off. Not my day off. Me day off.
Sundays are my day off. So it must be a good award to get me here.
It must be a good award to get me here. I mean, normally she's at home on Sunday, so the awards must be good if they managed to get her here. They must be good awards if they got me here. Okay, that was Jennifer Ellis. And again, you can see that video on the page if you want to see her as she says those sentences. Let's have a little look at some vocab here, okay? Let's have a look at some vocabulary. We're going to talk about some bits of the dialect or guess some typical sounding words that you might hear in Liverpool. So we've done different aspects of pronunciation, the accent. Let's look at a few different typical words. Now, to be honest, what I've done here is I've made a list and I've chosen to include words that I think you would find anywhere in the country, to be honest. I could have picked out specific dialect words, and I've done a few of those, but I didn't want it to be too heavily oriented towards the dialect words. To be honest, if you want to check out all of those specific dialect words, you can watch Korean Billy's videos about Liverpool dialect. But what I'm doing here is I'm picking out some words that you actually will find all over the country. Typical, fairly slang-style words that you would find anywhere. But let's listen out for how Scousers would say these things. So the first one was me instead of my. Me. And you heard her say that, I think, didn't you? Me instead of my, like, you've broken all me bickies, right? You've broken all my biscuits. You've broken all me bickies. Bickies instead of biscuits. And you've broken all me bickies. You've broken all my biscuits. Now, bickies, we do say bickies everywhere, to be honest. But it sounds so Scouse when you say bickies like that. Here, mace, you've broken all me bickies. What are you going to do? You, plural you, we had that in the John Bishop video, plural you becoming yous. Yous are all a bunch of bleeding idiots. You are all a bunch of bleeding idiots. Bleeding is like bloody, bloody idiots. But bleeding idiots. Yous are all a bunch of bleeding idiots. You're all a bunch of bloody idiots. Also adding the word me at the end of a sentence that starts with I, which again is not just in Liverpool. You find that all over the country, especially in the north, adding me at the end of a sentence that's begun with I. Like, I'm dead hungry, me. I'm dead hungry, me. I'm really hungry, me. I'm dead hungry, me. I'm dead hungry, meaning I'm very hungry. I'm dead hungry, me. All right. And saying the word mate, again, you hear that all over the country. All right, mate, how's it going, mate? But it's just sounds so Scouse when you do it with a Liverpool accent. All right, mate. Here, listen, mate, are you a student? All right, mate. Mace. Not mate or mate. All right, mate, in London. All right, mate. In Liverpool. In Birmingham. All right, mate. All right. All right, mate. In Liverpool. All right, mate. Mace. The word sound, which is an adjective. If you say that someone is sound, you mean that they're kind of cool, they're reliable, a good person. He's all right, isn't he, him? Yeah, he's sound. Sound as a pound. Sound. He's all right, isn't he, him? Yeah, he's sound. He's all right, isn't he, him? Yeah, he's sound. Sound. So Scouse. All right, mate. Sound. Not sound, but sound. Boss as well. That's boss, da. That's boss, da. Meaning that's boss, that. Oh, that's dead boss, da. That's dead boss, that. Meaning that's fantastic, that is. Here, that's boss, that. Have you played the new FIFA? It's boss. Have you played the new FIFA? It's Boss. Have you played the new FIFA, the computer game? It's brilliant. It's Boss, that. I'm made up, me. I'm absolutely made up. If you're made up, it means you're happy, you're delighted. I'm absolutely made up, me. And the one we heard before, what do you think about that? I'll tell you what, mate, I'm made up. Yeah, I just got the new FIFA, it's Boss. A as well. A, mate. Like that, A. Now, in like, certainly where I'm from, it would be oi, oi, mate. A, mate, what are you doing? A. All right. We also had, all right, all right, all right, all right. A. La as well. La meaning lad, which means boy. It's like a what you'd say to a male friend. All right, la. All right, la, how's it going, la? La, meaning friend. When you say goodbye, ta-ra then. All right, ta-ra, see you later. Ta-ra. Ta-ra, or ta-ra, or ta-da, all mean goodbye. All right, ta-ra then, see you later. All right then, ta-ra, see you later, bye. Ta-ra then, meaning goodbye. See you later. Comed. Comed, eh? Comed. Comed is like, oh, come on. Come on, then. All right, comed. Comed, you. It's like, come on, you, let's go. Comed, you, let's go. And then you've got comed, which is like, come on. And then you've got goed, which is go ahead, which is go on. Go ahead, mate. Go ahead, mate. All right, comed, go ahead, comed. And then there's the cliche, which is, all right, calm down, calm down. That's a cliche. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. Bevies, meaning drinks. Let's go into town and get a couple of bevies. Let's go into town and get a couple of bevies. Nice one, son. Nice one. So we say nice one everywhere. Oh, nice one, mate. Nice one, son. You might hear that in Liverpool. Nice one, mate. I tell you what, mate. I was absolutely gutted. I was gutted. If you're gutted, it means you're really disappointed. Really, really disappointed. I wanted to get tickets to see the new Star Wars film, but they're all sold out. I'm gutted. I went to get tickets to see the new Star Wars film, but they're all sold out. I'm gutted. They're all sold out. I'm gutted. Scran. I tell you what, mate. I'm dead starving, me. Let's go and get some scran. I'm dead hungry. I'm dead hungry, me. Let's go and get some scran. Let's go into town and get some scran and a couple of bevvies. Some scran means food. Yeah, I'm dead hungry. Let's go and get some scran. Let's go and get some food. Let's go and get a couple of bevvies. Let's go and get something to drink. Bevvies are drinks. Beverages. I used to live on a street in Liverpool, and on the corner of the street, there was a place that sold sandwiches. So I'd go down there and get my bacon sandwich or a bacon roll. A roll is like a little roll of bread, you know, a roll. So I'd get a bacon roll with ketchup and mustard. But in Liverpool, they don't call them a roll. They call them balms. A bacon balm. That's a bacon roll. And I'd be like, hello, can I have two bacon balms, please? Two bacon balms, please, Sandra. Two couple of bacon balms. Yeah, bacon balm. It just reminds me of Liverpool so much, that. What do you want, son? Do you want a bacon balm? Brekkie. Oh, I'm dead starving and I haven't even had any brekkie today. Let's go down to the cafe and get a couple of bacon balms for brekkie. Brekkie means breakfast. Again, we say brekkie everywhere, to be honest. Do you want to get some brekkie, for example? It's chock-a-block in town. It's chock-a-block. It's chocker. Chock-a-block means it's full. Again, we would say chock-a-block anywhere. It's absolutely chock-a-block out there. It's totally chock-a-block outside. And then like, you know, the way we say like all the time. But in Liverpool, it's just like, I was like walking down the Scotty Road and I seen these two students and I was like, here, are you two students? And they were like, yeah, we are, so what? You know. A lot of people in the UK get to know Scouse English very well from watching a TV show, which is not on telly anymore. The TV show is called Brookside. Brookside was a soap opera that started in the 1980s, and it basically was about sort of middle class and working class families living in Liverpool, and it often showed scenes of social problems between the characters, including frequent arguments between the main characters in the soap opera. And this kind of helped to build the stereotype that Scousers, certainly in the 80s, were often argumentative and prone to social problems and social difficulties. I'm now going to play you a clip from Brookside, and the summary is this. I'm going to give you the summary first before you listen to the clip. So you're going to hear three people. There's Barry, is it Barry? And Billy as well. Yeah. So there's Barry, Billy, and Billy's mum. All right. Is it Barry, Billy? No, hold on a minute. It's Barry, Barry's mum, and Billy. So you got Barry, Billy's mum. No, I'm too confused. Let's start this again. Three people. There's Barry. All right, Barry. There's Barry's mum. All right, Barry's mum. And then there's Billy. All right, Billy. So three people. So Barry wants his money. He's come to his mum's house. His mum lives with this guy called Billy. And Barry wants his money. I want my money. But the account is £500 short, so his mum doesn't have enough money to give it to him because his mum lent the money to someone else, Billy. So Barry's like, okay, let's cut out the middleman, and he says to Billy, just give me the money. And Billy says he hasn't got it because he needed it to pay the mortgage. The mortgage is when you've bought a house and you borrowed money to buy the house, and every month you have to pay it back. That's the mortgage. If you don't pay it back, they will take your house. So Billy hasn't got the money because he needed it to pay for the mortgage and to pay to repair the car. Barry then gets angry with Billy, saying, you've got it made here. You've got it made here, haven't you? Referring to the fact that Billy is living at Barry's mum's house, and it's easy. He's got an easy life because everything's paid for. You've got it made here. And Barry's angry with Billy because he's borrowing money from his mum. And, you know, he says things like, I'm going to have to go back to the car fella and tell him that I can't have the car. So he's got to lose the car. I've got to go back to the car fella and tell him I can't have the car. You've screwed up our Christmas. You've screwed up our Christmas. If you screw up someone's Christmas, it means you spoil their Christmas. You've screwed up our Christmas. And then they have a fight. OK, so that's what's going to happen here. See if you can follow it with all of the, it's very fast, angry argument, which is become part of a cliche in Liverpool that they're, hey mate, what's the matter with you? Are you talking to me? I am, as it, I'm so what of it? You know, they argue a lot. Here we go.
There it is, the key, Nate. Got it run on lead free. It's going to be well happy with it. Just do.
Okay.
So, have you got the money then, Mum?
The account's £500 short.
How come?
Your Mum lent it to me.
I wasn't talking to you.
I said she lent it to me.
All right, then. Well, let's cut off the middleman, eh? Give us the money, then.
I haven't got it, have I?
You know he hasn't got it.
Why?
I needed it to pay the mortgage.
Why?
He needed it.
Well, so do I.
Look, I got ripped off, didn't I?
So?
Look, the mortgage is doubled. Doreen's taken her share.
All right, my heart bleeds for him. So what?
Look, I live here as well, you know, and Claire.
Why shouldn't he pay your way, don't you?
Look, it wasn't just for the mortgage, right?
Feeding them as well, are you?
It was me car. The door's got pinched, didn't he?
Well, what are you saying? Debbie's not getting their car, so you can keep yours?
I've told you, you'll get your money back, all right?
Oh, you've really landed on your feet with air, haven't you, Billy?
Look, you'll get it back.
Mortgage, car maintenance.
Look at me when I'm talking to you, all right?
Interest-free loans.
This is my house.
500 quid if it's mine now, Billy. Our Simon's not getting his Christmas present because you can't keep your head above water.
Lay off, it's my house.
Listen, you told me you love me, Mam, and all things like that. And what are you doing now, eh? You're borrowing money off of Billy.
Don't push it, all right?
Listen, I've got to go back to the car, fella. I've got to tell him I can't have the car. I'll lose me deposits and everything because of you.
Look, you'll get your 500 plus whatever you lose on the car, okay?
Screwed up my Christmas, Billy. Mine, our Debbie's, and our Simon's. You know, you're nothing. You're just a loser, Billy. You are lame.
But I know!
You're just a loser, Billy. You are lame. There you go. So that kind of thing, which you saw in Brookside quite a lot, has turned into something of a cliche. And that, and this cliche was also sort of established or pushed by another TV show, a TV show called Harry Enfield's television programme, which is a really funny show from the 90s. And they made fun of various things in the culture. One of the sketches that they had in Harry Enfield's television programme was called The Scousers. And it was presented as a kind of soap opera about some Scousers. But the thing is that the characters, there are these three brothers, these three Scouse brothers, and they're dressed in like tracksuits, shell suits, these kind of cheap sports tracksuits that apparently Scousers used to wear all the time in the 80s. And they've all got permed curly hair and moustaches, which is another thing, a cliche of Scouse people in the 80s, that they wear like, they wore tracksuits and they had moustaches and permed hair, and that they would argue with each other all the time. So this cemented the stereotype of Scousers as argumentative and violent, often fighting and infighting, like fighting between each other, coming from large families with lots of brothers, always wearing these shell suits, these kind of cheap tracksuits, unemployed, probably around the house all day, with moustaches and curly permed hair. So let's have a little clip of the Scousers from Harry Enfield's television programme. And you will hear certain phrases that always get repeated. And these are the clichés now, unfortunately, that many people associate with Liverpool. And one of them is like, all right, calm down, calm down. That's what you'd say if two people are about to have a fight. They're about to have a fight and you come in, all right, calm down, what's going on here? You know, and then the other one will be like, "Yeah, are you telling me to calm down?" And then, you know, the other one will try and stop the argument. All right, you two, break it up, eh? Break it up. Break it up means break up the fight. All right, you two, break it up, eh? Break it up. What's going on here, eh? And the word friggin', which is like a replacement for the other F word. Friggin' hell. You know, do you have to make such a friggin' fuss about it? Do you have to make such a friggin' fuss about it? To make a fuss about something is to make a big scene, to act like something's really, really big and difficult or important, for example. For example, if I said, do you want a cup of tea? And you go, no. And, I don't know. And you go, well, I'm making one. Do you want one or not? And it's, you don't have to make a big fuss out of it. You don't have to make a big fuss about it. Do you have to keep making such a friggin' fuss about it? And just keep out of it, Barry. Just keep out of it. If you keep out of it, it means that you don't get involved in someone else's argument. Just keep out of it. Here, are you telling me to keep out of it? All right, calm down, you two. Break it up, break it up. Are you telling me to calm down? Yeah, I am, as it happens. There's no need to make such a friggin' fuss about it. And it goes round and round and round like that. So here we go. This is the Scousers from Harry Enfield's television programme.
Tea, Barry. I've
just had one.
Hey, well, I'm making one. Do you want one or not?
Jesus, do you have to make such a fuss about it?
I'm not making a friggin' fuss about it.
Either make a cup of tea or don't. Just get off my friggin' back.
Don't right. Talk to me like that. I'll break your friggin' neck, all right?
Come on, calm down, calm down.
It's only a cup of tea we're talking about, yeah?
Yeah, he's right, sir. It's only a cup of tea.
Yeah.
What do you mean, yeah? This is a cup of tea we're talking about here.
I know it's a big cup of tea, don't I?
You obviously don't, do you? You don't know nothing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You two break it. Look, what's all this about, Gary?
You keep out of it, Barry.
You telling me to keep out of it?
Are you asking me? Well, I'm telling you to keep out of it.
Yeah, I am.
Hey, all right, you two, break it up, eh?
What's going on here, eh? You asking me what's going on here?
Yeah, I'm freaking out.
I'm going to burst it in a minute.
Oh, yeah, you just try it. Kettle's boiled. Oh, great. Tea, anyone?
Yeah.
Kettle's boiled, right? The kettle's boiled, that's what you use to boil the water. Kettle's boiled. Oh, great, cup of tea, anyone?
I do.
Look, don't start, all right?
All right, great, cup of tea, eh?
Yes,
all right, just what the doctor orders, eh? Hey, pass the milk, sir. You ordering me about?
Yeah, what about it? Don't what about me or what about you? Oh, all right.
Don't miss next week's edition of Breadside, in which Gary, Barry and Terry have an argument.
Okay. You can see lots more of those on YouTube. If you just search for Harry Enfield, the Scousers, you'll find it. Now, I don't want to give you the idea that, you know, people in Liverpool are all arguing all the time. Oh, like, calm down, calm down. I thought I'd play that to you because it's kind of, it is something that probably all British people know about because of the popularity of that show. But in reality, you know, people from Liverpool, you know, they're not any more argumentative than anyone else, really. And you could listen to other people. You could listen to the Beatles, for example. Maybe we'll have a little example of the Beatles. Now, the Beatles are also famously from Liverpool, but nobody seems to really speak like them anymore. The accent in Liverpool has become a bit more nasal, a bit harsher. You know, you get that sort of Liverpool accent now, don't you? You know, that sort of thing. Whereas, in the time of the Beatles sort of spoke this kind of Liverpool accent like that. And you don't really hear that sort of thing much more, do you? But you can hear the Scouse in their voices if you listen carefully. Let's have a little listen to the Beatles. This is going to be an old recording from many years ago. I think this is probably 1964. February 1964, right at the beginning of their careers. They've just come back to the UK after their first trip to the United States, where they had a lot of success and they played at the Ed Sullivan Show. Let's see if we can pick out any features of their voices and notice any bits of Scouse in there. This is them arriving at the airport. Oh, here we go.
What did you most like about the trip, Ringo?
What did you most like about the trip, Ringo?
All of it, you know, especially Miami. The sun, you know. I didn't know what it meant until I went over there.
Don't you get it up in Liverpool?
No, they're finished up there, you know.
You can hear the humour as well, because like he's saying, you know, what did you think? And he's like, oh, it's amazing, the sun. And the interviewer goes, oh, don't you get any sun in Liverpool? He's like, no, they've finished up there now. So that kind of casual humour. The Beatles were amazing, I have to say.
What did you most like about the trip, Ringo?
Oh, I just loved all of it, you know, especially Miami. The sun, you know. I didn't know what it meant until I went over there.
Don't you get it up in Liverpool?
No, they finished up there, you know. Cut it out.
They finished up there. So you can still hear the. Yeah, they finished up there, you know.
Did you ever have a chance, John, to just get away on your own without anybody recognising you?
We borrowed a couple of millionaires' houses, you know. Well, we did.
You could afford to buy a couple of millionaires' houses, couldn't you?
No, John. We're sooner borrow them, it's cheaper. And we did a bit of water skiing. Well, sort of, anyway.
Yeah, we had a great time. Did your wife enjoy it over there?
Yeah, she loved it. Who?
Shh, don't tell him he's married, it's a secret.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I didn't mean to. What about the taste of the fans over there? Did you find same stuff?
You never been.
Yeah. We expected them to be very different, but they weren't at all.
Yeah.
We expected them to be very different, but they weren't at all. That's Paul McCartney there, you hear, speaking like that. And Paul has got this sort of Liverpool accent going on quite a lot. Bearing in mind, this is 1964, so, you know, you heard that kind of thing.
Over there, did you find same stuff?
You never been.
We expected them to be very different, but they weren't at all.
Yeah.
The accent was the only thing, you know, it was the only difference. Lovely.
Did they reckon you sang in an English accent or American?
No, some fella said, how come, because you're from Britain and you're still singing American accent or something?
Yeah.
So funny. We've been trying to explain it to him that it's a Liverpool
American,
accent.
You know, but he wouldn't believe it.
He kept saying, oh, it's funny.
When you came back from France, you told me that they like the sort of quicker numbers.
Yeah.
But what did you do? You just do all the same routine as you do here?
Because the
records that are hit over there are the ones that are hit.
Oh, yeah,
over
we had to do Please Please Me over there.
Yeah.
And we haven't been doing that for a long time here, but it's in the charts.
That's history here.
Yeah.
What about the Beatles styles, all these wigs and suits and things? Are they catching on over?
Yeah, they're selling well.
I hear anyway that the four of you are going to be millionaires by the end of the year.
That's nice.
Have you got time to actually spend this money?
What money?
Brilliant money.
He
well.
Said.
Doesn't he give any to you?
No. Have you seen that car of his?
You're fired.
What money?
One of the things you did was visit Clay.
All right, that's enough of that. I think we're going to end with just, I guess, some clips from this little documentary I found on YouTube. Here we go. I'm just trying to queue it up here. This was It's just described as English 10, Scouse accent 2. So I'll just play you a few clips from here, because there's this woman talking about Liverpool and about Liverpool accent, and it's just quite nice. I just thought I'd end by giving you a sample of just a normal Scouse voice, not from a comedy sketch, not a footballer, just a normal woman who's clearly got a Scouse accent.
I'm Jackie Downey, and I'm proud to say I am a genuine Scouser, even though I've lived away from the town a long time. People have very funny definitions, I think, of what it is to be a Scouser, and because I've lived away so long, I'm sick of defending the city and going against what people's preconceptions of a Scouser is. You know, like the old days in the 80s when Harry Enfield did the Scouser sketch, the shell suits, the perms, calm down, calm down.
This is the life, eh?
Hey! Hey, you want to fight or something?
Originally, Liverpool has started off as an amazing worldwide seaport, didn't it? And it attracted all kinds of different nationalities all over the world. And from what I've gathered, even the word Scouser, it comes from when there was a huge influx of Norwegian shipping into the port in the 18th and 19th centuries. And the poor sailors used to make this sort of lobster or seafood stew called Scouser, something like that, or Scouse. And then that, it came from that originally, even the word Scouser comes from a Norwegian stew made by Scandinavian sailors. It's quite interesting, I think, that one time in my life when I was about 11, I'm an only child, and my great-grandfather came to live with us, but I was also living with my grandparents and my mum and dad. So there were four generations of Scousers in the house, and even as a child I could hear the differences. Like my grandparents, my grandfather was a real Irish Scouser, but he was from the Scotland Road area, and he was a singer and a comedian. And his dialect, and I've researched this as well because I'm interested in the Scouse dialect, it was more a mixture of Lancashire and Irish than it is now. And it's changed dramatically, I think. And when we got into the 60s with all the free thinking and the drugs and everything, and young people got more of a voice, and I think they got more sort of aggressive as well. And now I think it's changed even further, where a lot of like young people, like your age and younger, have sort of got this slight aggressive tone, I think, to their voice sometimes. And a lot of the girl, you know, they force us up and down into the news, like. In 20 years' time, the dialect could well change again, because with phonetics and when you'd study voice, it takes one or two generations, apparently, for a dialect to change if a new influx of people come into the city. So maybe that could happen.
I think, in my opinion, I think the language is going to become more homogenous. It's going to become less distinct. Because I think with the influence of media, especially global media, accents, I think right across this country, especially, I'm not an expert on it, like I say, but across this country, I think they're changing. Everything's just becoming a little bit more the same-ish. We've still got our varieties within the regions and stuff like that, but everything's just becoming a little bit more homogenised.
So that guy at the end thinks that accents are becoming more and more homogenised. I wonder if that's true. I also wonder about accents in your countries. As ever. So a couple of questions at the end of this episode. Question number one is, how do you feel now? Do you feel slightly more familiar with the Liverpool accent than you did before? And secondly, what do you think of the Liverpool accent? I wonder if you like it or not. There's a chance that you won't like it. You'll be like, I don't want it. I don't like English. That's all up there like that. It's not always up there like that. Some people speak down here like this, don't they? And it's not always as strong as you hear in, you know, the recordings I've played you in this episode. Sometimes people speak pretty much normal English, but with a slight Scouse accent on top of it, you know, like that. It can be great. It can be really charming, you know, like, for example, the Beatles. That's one of the things that about them that there was charming, was this the way that they spoke. You know, and like the way Paul speaks, you know, it's great. He's got his own way of speaking. You know, like this, he'll be just telling a story about the Beatles and something will just come up in the story, you know. I think it was John. That was very John, that sort of thing, you know. And so what do you think of the Liverpool accent? And what about accents in your countries? Tell me about the diversity of different accents that you can find where you're from. And, you know, keep listening to the podcast. We will move around the country. We'll visit different areas. We'll consider the different accents. I'll give you a chance to listen to them as well. Thank you so much for listening all the way up to this point. I'll speak to you again on the podcast soon. But for now, it's time to say goodbye. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.